Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good.
Hi, I'm Denise Schwartz, your host. You know, we humans, we're such curious creatures. We have a natural curiosity about things we can't understand. We love puzzles and riddles and mysterious things. Our curiosity drives us to find reasons for things, drives us to make connections between seemingly disparate occurrences. We love mysteries. We want to know, what is it? What happened? What does it mean? And why? Now, researcher George Lowenstein suggests that when we encounter a mystery, our brain detects an inconsistency between what we know and what we could know. This triggers an urge to seek answers. Now, mystery books tap into this desire to find an answer to a puzzle. What happened? Why did someone do what he or she did? And who did it? Neuroscience tells us that when we encounter something puzzling or unexpected, our good old dopamine pathways, which, as we all know, are responsible for feelings of pleasure and motivation, they activate. So solving a mystery or uncovering clues releases dopamine. No wonder that the mystery and thriller genre is the second most popular book genre in the publishing world. Reading mysteries makes us feel good. So we're going to feel good today. We're going to talk about mysteries because my guest today is Joan Livingston. She's an author of novels for adult and young readers, including the Isabel Long Mystery Series. Joan drew upon her experience as a journalist, including being editor-in-chief for newspapers in Massachusetts and New Mexico, to create Isabel Long, who is a widow who uses the skills she acquired in the newspaper business to solve cold cases in the fictional hill towns of Western Massachusetts. Hello, Joan.
Well, hello, Denise. Thank you for having me here. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. I've read your books, and I couldn't wait to talk to you about it because I really, well, we'll talk about setting later, but I really liked the setting you used for your mysteries. They're called, for people who don't know, it's the hill towns of Western Massachusetts. And when you have characters from the hill towns, knowing some of those kinds of people who live in the hill towns, I think you really nailed it. So that was really fun to read. So anyway, I know that you have written literary fiction and short stories and poetry, but today we're going to talk really about your mysteries, and then maybe if we have time, some of the other things you've written. I want to ask you, you know, when I was little, I read all the Nancy Drew books, and so after I finished reading those, I saw everything was mysterious. I saw mysteries everywhere. Do you?
I don't know if I see mysteries everywhere, but I see stories everywhere. And, you know, actually, it's interesting. The book that I just finished, mm-hmm. I had an interesting experience where it was the day, actually, of my mother's funeral.
Oh.
And I was walking around my hometown of Fairhaven, and this man that I didn't know came up to me and said, "My mother was killed so many years ago, and her case was never solved." And
oh,
I went,
my.
I said, "What's her name? What's you know, when this happened?" And my husband was next to me. Said, "How do you attract people like that?" And anyways, I looked it up, and it was true. And that became the inspiration for the book I just finished, where Isabel and her mom are having dinner at a restaurant, and she's approached by a man like that. So that fell into my lap.
Wow. I know you want to say something else right now, but can I ask you about that? Did you talk to the person who came to you at the cemetery in real life to let that person know you were going to kind of use that as a kernel for your book?
No, it was outside the library. It wasn't at the cemetery.
Oh, okay. Got it.
No, I mean, I didn't say something to him like that,
yeah.
You know. But, you know, as my motto in life is as a writer is I take what I know and I have my way with it. And that's the case of this one. In the case of the book, the man is homeless. I don't know if this man was homeless
no,
or not.
No.
So I just took his story and you know, set it in the Hilltowns.
So that kind of just comes to you. I was going to ask you a little bit later in our conversation, you know, how do you get your ideas? But I guess they come to you.
Yes, they do. They do. Well, I'm a big fan of Stephen King's book on writing, where he says writing is telepathic. And mm-hmm. I sit down at my computer and, what I type into that comes from somewhere.
Right.
And that's how I write. Not everybody writes that way, but it works for me. And I don't know, that's just...
Well, how did Isabel Long come to you?
Well, a friend of mine wrote a mystery, and I thought, I'll try it. You know, I love watching mysteries. I like reading mysteries. And I just sat down, and actually the opening to this book is what I wrote.
And oh, it didn't change.
It didn't change.
So you sat down and you started to write. This was not your first mystery, though, right?
No, this is my first mystery.
Your first mystery, and it came to you, and that's how it was published, the first page.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Actually, most of my book is pretty much what is the first draft pretty much sticks. I'll go back and change little things, but pretty much it's the same.
So tell us about Isabel.
Isabel Long, I wanted to create a character that wasn't some sweet young thing. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have what the French call une femme de soutenage, you know, and she's coming off a bad year. Her husband died suddenly. She lost her job as the editor-in-chief of a newspaper.
Well, that sounds familiar.
Well, no, that didn't happen to me.
But it happened to so many.
I guess. But and her mother came to live with her, 92-year-old mother, which wasn't a bad thing. And she decides to solve a cold case in her hometown, in her town of Conwell, where this woman walked home from her family's a general store and was never seen again. And it was also Isabel's first big story as a rookie reporter.
Mm.
So she uses the skills she learned as a journalist and applies them to being a PI.
So, like, what might that be? What are those skills?
Well, you have to know the questions to ask. You know, you look for sources, you know. She has, one of the things I did as a reporter, we haven't gone into that, but I used to be a reporter for the Gazette a long time ago mm-hmm. in the Hilltowns. And on Fridays, I called it Checking the Traps, which is also the name of the third book, where on Fridays, I would call different people or visit them. Hey, what's going on? You know, and the tips they would give me would lead to stories.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah. Checking the traps.
Yeah. And that's what Isabel does. And one thing, plus she takes a job working at the Rooster, which is the local bar. And that's also a great place to find, tips and info.
Oh, in a bar, sure. Yeah. Especially if you're the bartender.
Yeah, she's the bartender.
But we've skipped ahead a little bit because I know there is a bartender in your stories. And we definitely want to talk about him. I think we can talk about that right now. So you have this great cast of characters. Isabel's mom has a role in your books.
Mm-hmm. She's Maria. She's based on my mom, my late mom, and she comes to live with her, and she loves to read detective novels and smutty romance novels and always comes along sometimes on her interviews, and she's very astute. So
she kind of encourages you when she thinks that this is going to be okay or this might be too dangerous, or mm-hmm. that's what I got from reading your books, that mom was sort of like the person you run things by and kind of use her as not a source. What would you say? How does she fit in with that?
She's her Watson.
She's your Watson. Was your mom in real life your Watson?
No, but she loved reading books. I mean, there's a lot of my mom in her, but she was very proud that I wrote these books.
So. Oh, that's really good. I love it. I don't know if my mother would be my Watson. What do you think, Ma? Oh, she says she'd like to be. Okay, so, you know, there's also in your book this ruggedly handsome Hilltown bar owner named Jack.
Jack Smith, yeah.
Now, I have to say, I found that Isabel and Jack's repartee was really real and refreshing, and it wasn't adolescent. It was very adult.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about Jack.
Well, she goes to work at Jack's bar, the Rooster, and she's a newcomer. He's a native, you know. And his family there, and they just strike up. There's some sort of romance that involved. I don't want to go into too much detail what happens.
Okay,
but it's an adult relationship, and I'm very fond of Jack. So you know.
I really liked him too. I liked him as a, I thought it would be fun if he was a real person. It'd be fun to get to know him. So your mysteries take place, at least in this series, in our hill towns.
Mm-hmm.
So for listeners who don't live in this area, they might want to know that the hill towns are towns and villages that are nestled in the low hills that kind of roll west mm-hmm. from our Connecticut River Valley right here in western Massachusetts. They roll towards the Berkshires. And the Berkshires are the mountains that are pretty much close to the New York state border. And the hill towns are in an area that's very different from the valley in that there are lots of streams and rivers and farms and what we call them mountains, but they're really hills, and back roads and old buildings, because a lot of the hill towns were settled in the 1700s and 1800s. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of old twisty roads and old stone fences, and it just sets a beautiful tone for any story, but particularly a mystery. Are those some of the reasons that you chose the hill towns?
Well, when we moved there from Boston in 1981, I really became immersed into the hill towns. And then I became a reporter. I was the Worthington correspondent, being paid by the inch in 1985, I believe. And then eventually I became the hill town reporter, covering a bunch of little towns. And I love telling people's stories. And a lot of times I told the stories of people. I remember Lester Champion calling me up and saying, "You got to go talk to Mary Katachevich. She's got a pet porcupine." So I went and found Mary Katachevich. She lived way out in the boonies of Worthington, and yeah, she had a pet porcupine, you know. But she told me other stories about how they settled there. Her family's Russian. How they used to walk all the way to Huntington to catch the train. And I just love telling people stories, and so it came only natural that I would use this setting, you know.
It's a beautiful setting. It's very, very rural, but that doesn't mean that all the folks who live there are very rural. There are some very well-educated folks that come out from the universities. People, there are a lot of writers. We have a lot of lectures. We have a lot of good understanding of current affairs and things that are happening, and also history in this area, but also in the hill towns. And tell us about some of the characters. I love some of the characters, the person who owns the gas station, the person who owns the general store. I mean, tell us about them and how they kind of fit the hill town character.
One of my favorite characters is Annette Waters. She comes in the second book.
Right.
She owns a junkyard and a garage, and she hires Isabel to find out what happened to her father. Her father, Chet At Waters, was this real character, and allegedly he was too drunk to get out of his house when it caught fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Annette so much. Her nickname is the Tough Cookie. Isabel gives these secret nicknames to people that are in her mysteries.
And
she's the Tough Cookie. And so she carries through the whole series. A very popular group is the Old Farts.
Oh, yes, I remember them.
Now, there are these old men who hang out in the back room of the general store. And I think as I've been reading, doing readings and stuff, a lot of people will tell me, yeah, there's a restaurant or, you know, this is pretty common. Anyways, they know what's going on. They
sure.
know what's going on not only in their town, but around it. They have their perfect source of intel. And she calls them secret nicknames like the fattest old fart, the old fart with glasses, the serious old fart with her, you know, salient characteristics. Other characters, yeah, Jack's really cool. I'm trying to think who else would be.
Oh, there was a person who owned a bar in another town.
Oh, Dancing Dave.
Dave, yes, yeah, right. I liked him too.
Yeah, Dancing Dave Baxter. He's the one that, he has a huge crush on Isabel. And she, you know, she's kind of more interested in Jack, but he's a great source of information. He owns a bar on a lake, more of a biker bar.
You know, speaking of bars, I just can't help but think about a certain bar in a town called Shelburne Falls that might have influenced your bar scenes at all. I think it's called Floodwater.
Oh, okay. Well, that's my son's brewery.
Yes, I know.
No, actually, it didn't.
It didn't?
No. When we lived in Worthington, we would go to Liston's on Friday night and dance, my husband and I.
Oh, I haven't been there.
And it was actually under new ownership now. They actually tore it down and rebuilt it. And that is more the inspiration. That's a real country bar. And
I just wanted to get a plug in for Floodwater.
Well, my son's brewery is great. And actually, it's the only place you can buy my books.
Really?
Yeah, I don't sell in bookstores. You can buy it at the usual place on Amazon, but he sells them, he carries them for me. I only sell them for $10 there.
You know, well, that's a good son.
Yeah, he is a great son. I've had a few readings there, but it's a great place, and the amount of musical talent that comes there is amazing.
Yes, so I've heard. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you write.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sit down and
write.
Right. Like today, I usually do 500 words a day. Mm-hmm. 500 is a great amount. You make progress. I mean, the Isabel Long book's around 75,000 words. This book, other books are 65,000 or whatever. So I'll work, 500 is good. Sometimes I'll go over, you know, but I aim for that because it's a very pleasurable amount of writing to do, and it's very progressive.
And do you know where you're going when you sit down to write, or do you write out that day or think that day about what you want to write, or does it just, as you said before, just come to you when you sit down?
Sometimes I'm in the shower. Some of my best ideas come from the shower or if I'm driving.
Driving. I wonder why that is. Mine used to come from driving.
Yeah.
I mean, you're supposed to be paying attention to the road, but, you know, your brain is doing this other thing. Good ideas pop in.
Yeah, they do. But, you know, once I get a book established, it kind of things just kind of flow. So, you know.
You know, so you're retired from a career in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know, it seems that a lot of people retire and then they become creative, and many people turn to writing. Maybe they do their own stories, or they write something for their descendants to read.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about older adults and creativity, creative endeavors, specifically writing?
Well, I didn't start writing when I retired. I used to get up at 5 a.m. and write before I went to the newsroom.
Oh, my.
And I did that for many years. Now I don't have to get up at 5, which is good. I actually lead a writing group at the Senior Center in Shelburne Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a closed group. It was pitched to me as a memoir writing group, but I try to give them writing prompt. Oh, let me back up here. What happens, we meet on Fridays. I give them a writing prompt. They get 25 minutes to write, and then they read what they wrote. And actually, that's hard for me to do. I'm not that kind of a writer, but they really like it. And I try to give them writing prompts, not like my best friend growing up, but things like this past week we did one. What was it? I'm trying to remember what it was. Staying in tune. That's what it was.
Staying in tune.
And so I try to give them things that they can interpret in many ways. And the writing I hear is just really fabulous. You know, I have another writing group in, it comes to Floodwater on the third Sundays at noon.
Oh my.
And I do it early before the bar opens the tap room opens, and it gets really loud. And people now bring what they've written and share. We have people who are writing, it's all ages though.
Oh, okay.
But people who are writing nonfiction, poetry, short stories, whatever they're doing on Substack, a Substack post or something like that.
The folks who come to your writing groups, what do they want to do with their writing? I mean, do they see themselves publishing important books, or are they doing it for pleasure? What are their motivations?
In my senior writing group, some person has been writing all their life and writing in a journal.
Mm-hmm.
One person is actually been writing a memoir, and I hope to help her with that. She has been a very interesting life. I don't know if they have any plans to publish. We actually, let me back up again and say that I've approached the Senior Center about doing a book with a collection.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do the layout for that for free, you know, because
nice.
I taught myself. And we're seeing how that will work out. In terms of my other writing group at Floodwater, or Floodwater Writers, as I call us, one woman is actually writing a book. It's a nonfiction that she hopes to publish. I'm not sure about the others, whether they are planning to do that. As I've said many a time, there's writing, and then there's the business of writing.
Right.
And that's the hard part.
Do you want to talk about that now, or should we talk about that after you read something from your book?
We can talk about it after. That's fine.
Okay. Let's read something.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I don't want to read too long. So one of people really, really love Isabel's mother, Maria. In fact, many people have told me, please don't kill her off. Oh.
It would be really horrible to have your mom die in your story. No, I wouldn't like that.
And I said, okay, no, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. I'll kill off other people, but not my mother. So anyways, so in this case, this is the first book, and Isabel is deciding whether she wants to pursue this case. And she's nabbed a folder of cold cases from the newsroom when she left. She wasn't supposed to do that, but she did that. And she's really interested in pursuing the case I described, how this woman walked home from her general store. And so here's a conversation between them, and here I'll go. My mother's head tips to one side. Besides being a nice kind of nosy, she's read tons of detective novels and watches the same kinds of movies. Tell me more about her. What's her name? Adela Collins. She lived with her son Dale not far from the store. He's still in town. She was the store's cashier. People liked her. I never heard anyone say anything bad about her, even before she disappeared. She was divorced twice, but both happened a long time ago. I sometimes saw her at the Rooster. That's the bar in town. What about the son? Dale was only 10 when it happened. He doesn't seem the child killer type to me. He went to live with his grandparents, but then he inherited his mother's house. He's kind of a sad sack. What do you mean? I don't know if I've ever seen him smile. He doesn't stick with one job too long. What about the cops? Oh, they treat it like a missing persons case. At least the 7 years are long gone, so the family could officially declare her dead and take care of the paperwork. When was the last time anyone saw her? Her son was sleeping over at his grandparents' house that night, so it would have been after she left the store and walked home. It was a Monday evening. People said they saw the lights on at her house. They were still lit when her father came to check on her the next morning. Get this. Her dog was inside. Her purse was on the counter. Nothing was taken.
Ooh. I want to ask you something. So, when you're writing that, did you think that, we don't want any spoilers here, but by saying the purse was there, that means, you know, there was nothing was taken and the dog was still there. So are these clues or does that just set the scene?
I think it sets the scene. I mean,
did you provide any clues to the ending in that part that you were talking about?
Not really. I keep people guessing to the end. And what makes me so happy is when I meet readers and they go, I couldn't figure it out until the end.
Oh, I'm thinking about one.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's the one in which Dancing Dan is prominent.
Okay, he's
in the autumn, and the house burns down.
Oh, that's the second one.
Yeah. And after I read it, and I knew what the clue was that helped solve it. Don't worry, I'm not going to say.
Okay.
I flashed on the scene where that clue first appeared, and I thought, I should have known, because that was just so, like, randomly said. Mm-hmm. I should have known that that was going to be important. And that made me think about how to place clues in stories so that they don't seem like clues, but in the end, yeah, that was the thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do know what you're talking about. Thank you for not giving it away.
Oh, I wouldn't give that away. No. I love that. That was really nice. I love how you made the characters really come alive. It sounded really good. So I hope people pick up your books and read them. But before we find out how they can get your books, let's talk about what you just brought up. There's writing, and then there's the business of writing. So for folks who might be listening, who are thinking they're writing something and they might want to publish it, let's talk to them about that.
Yes, it's tough. I finished my first book in 1999, and it took, in those days, you would send a letter and a part of your manuscript or whatever the agent wanted, and with a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you would hear back. Now, if you want to get published either by a small media, a small publisher or an agent, they'll say, if it's all done online, and if you don't hear from us in 5 months, consider it a no.
Isn't that awful?
I have submitted, I have queried hundreds of agents and publishers. I've had two agents. They were decent people, but it didn't work out. It took me until I moved back to Western Mass in 2017 to find a publisher. And that one was based in France.
Isn't that interesting?
They're from Scotland. The people were from Scotland, and they lived in France. And until recently, they published 11 of my books, and but they closed in the springtime.
Oh, dear.
Well, they gave us notice, and they actually closed officially in September and released our books to us. And then at that point, I said, no more begging. I'm not doing it ever again.
Yeah.
But I did get reached out by a publisher in London, and so they published the first three books in this series. In the meantime, I taught myself how to do the format for Kindle and paperback.
You did.
And I republished every book.
How long did that take?
It took months. Well, I had to wait for them to release everything. You know, the hardest one was the first one because I had to teach myself
how to do it.
Since then, I helped two people publish theirs, you know.
Oh. Everybody's going to be calling you now that you've said that. I'm just telling you.
Well,
Alex, can we edit that out? No.
But, you know, it's I listen to and I read a lot of good writing, and it is such, there's so much competition in order to get it to the public. Mm. Not only do you have to publish, you have to promote your writing.
Yes.
And you have to, like, this is a silly thing, okay? One of the best ways for me to get reviews and to get hook readers is I give my book away on Kindle for 2 days. I actually pay two promotion companies to let people know that it's available.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will, you know, they'll get the free book. You know, they send out all these emails and whatever. And then hopefully if they read it, they get it for free. If they're on Kindle Unlimited, I'll get paid for pages read. But that's how I've hooked people onto the series. It's tricky, you know. I mean, I've been on blog tours, but I don't find them as useful as maybe other people do. I'm on Substack, which I find, that was a social media that I found. Of course, I do social media as well, but that's, are you familiar with Substack?
Mm-hmm.
It's like almost, in terms of writers, a lot of people, like Heather Cox Richardson is on there. Sherman Alexie's on there. And they'll post. Heather does every week, or every day, actually. Sherman every few days. But people will, you know, I do this one called Hilltown Postcards.
Oh, nice.
And I write about, this is nonfiction. And then I'll write about a one called North Verhaven Girl. North Verhaven is where I'm from. And other times I'll write about writing or whatever. And it's a way to attract people to my book.
To your writing,
to my writing. So you have to do a great deal of self promotion if you're doing it yourself.
So are you saying that for those folks who are thinking about publishing, the way to do it is to do what? Self publish?
Yeah, you could self publish. I mean, you can find help in terms of doing the layout. I would avoid, now out there, there's a lot of really legitimate small publishing houses.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of publishers that take advantage of people who want to publish. I know of one author who pays a publisher $2,000 to have his books published, and none of his book, very few books get sold.
I know. You hear those stories.
And so you have to be wary about that, you know. But you could get...
But we shouldn't discourage people from writing.
Oh, no, no, no. Go, you know, it's great. Everybody has, like I've mentioned before, everybody has a story to tell, you know. And maybe it's something you want to share with your family. Maybe
right.
it's something you just want to put down in writing.
But I mean, doing the actual work of writing is really helpful, too. I mean, it helps you find yourself, helps you understand your own voice, understand what your values are. There's so much importance in just doing that creative work. So I think that a lot of folks who want to be published might come to terms with the fact that maybe they never will be, but that doesn't mean that they have wasted their time or their effort, because that piece of writing can stand the test of time. Put it in a drawer somewhere. Somebody will find it someday. They might read something that you've had to say, and they might be moved by that or changed by that.
And also it's fun.
And it is fun, up to a point, and then it's maybe not.
No, no, you know,
it's always fun for you?
It's always fun for me. It's my creative expression.
Yeah.
And, I really enjoy it. When I meet people who say, I write, I don't, you know, it's so painful for me to write, but I said, find another way to express yourself, you know? You know, but no, I just really enjoy doing it.
Well, you know, now that we have to wind down, I see Alex giving me the sign over there. I want to say it's Also, it might be enjoyable for you to write your books, but it's also really enjoyable to read them.
Oh, thank you.
I've had a lot of fun reading them. I know I probably do what a lot of people do, try to figure out, well, who is that character really in real life? And you've already told me, oh, no, you don't do that. But it is fun to sort of say, I know somebody like that. I think this is a really good time, if you don't mind, to let people know, oh, you already have, where they can find your books. At Floodwater Brewing Company in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts.
Right.
And?
Of course, Amazon. You can get it in Kindle, and you can get it in paperback. And actually, this spring, I have 3 books coming out.
Wow.
One is the next in my middle grade series called Twin Gin and the Alchemy Machine.
What is that called?
The Twin Gin and the Alchemy Machine. It's actually based in the Hilltowns. A family of genies moved to the Hilltowns, and so that the kids can learn more about humans. And they go to a school, and for their science fair project, they create an alchemy machine that actually works.
Wow.
Which brings them unnecessary attention. The second book is The Swanson Shuffle, which is inspired by my experience living and working in a psychiatric halfway house when Massachusetts started closing its hospitals. And the third one is number 8 in the Isabel Long Mystery Series, and that one's called Finding the Source, and that is the first outright murder she's going to be investigating.
I can't wait to see how that one works out.
Oh, and one more thing, an audiobook. I'm doing an audiobook of the 4 short stories that I produce, Professor Groovy and other stories. So it's a busy spring.
Joan, you're doing so much. It's so wonderful. You're smiling. You should see she has a smile going across her whole face. She's like, yeah, I'm doing it. I'm really busy. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's been so much fun talking with you. I feel inspired. I'm going to go home and write.
And could please do.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College, at 413-775-1819. If you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.